buddy. Rolling like a big shot, Chevy tuned up like a NASCAR pit stop. Fresh paint job, fresh inside. It's the outside frame and the trunk wide. All the rims big, do it ride good. Lean back, right hand on the pine wood. Pine wood.
Alrighty, puck off the glass and slap my ass. Kyle, here we are today, buddy. How we feeling?
Well, could be better. Could be better, Chris.
Yeah. Fucking Kyle broke his foot. We're not able to be in the same thing right now. Kyle, why don't you let us know the ball hockey war story here? We got to hear that right off the hop, first of all. What the fuck happened?
It is a death trap out there. Outside rink. It was raining all day yesterday. It calmed
Where's
down.
Where's St. Jean? He should be up there drying that shit. That
should be with the fucking rain towel.
Peter, where are you, buddy?
But anywho, long story short, middle of the second period, boys are down 4-1. We make it 4-2. We make it 4-3. It's a close game. Down a goal. I make a move at the blue line, geek the guy's pants off, and he turns around and gives me the good old Brian McCabe can opener and ripped my top off like a can of anchovies, and I went flying into the boards, and the impact must have fractured my foot. But, I mean, I got up. We had a power play. I stayed on the ice. I felt fine. I go back to the bench. You can really start to feel it, but I played the rest of the game. It's crazy what adrenaline will do to your body and what you can kind of go through, because the second the game was over and we're going through the handshake line, I can't walk. I got in the car. I took the shoe off. I had to drive with my left foot, which is like playing go-karts. I got home and I couldn't stand on my foot. And I went to the hospital, got some x-rays. Yeah, broken foot, boys. My season's over. Call me Chris Wagner. My playoffs are done.
Yeah, buddy, you're like Chris Wagner, exactly. The Boston Bruins forward, he's out. Nola Chari steps back in tonight. Kyle, there has been some big-ass shit going on in hockey right off the hop. I think we got to do an addition to Honk My Horn. What the fuck has happened to the goal? To one, to video review, and two, just officiating in general. It's a fucking circus out there.
You know, the NHL officiating has been a circus for some time, and I'm going to say it, video replay has made it worse. Because before, the refs were given a leash, and mistakes are made. It's a fast game. It's played in real time. Watch the videos in slow-mo all you want. That's not what the ref's seeing. It's a fast game out there. There's a lot going on. And the second we start to implement these video replays where certain things are reviewable, certain things aren't, that's where it's going to cause some trouble. Because as much as the refs want to get that call right, and I'm sure if they had the option to, they would have called that goal back. But it's not a reviewable play. That's not on the refs. That's on that's on the rule book. That's on the league.
Yeah. No, it's true, man. And, you know, like you just said, it's crazy. We have a system where you can review if a skate is a millimeter off the ice for offside, but you can't take a fucking look at a hand pass or if the puck goes out and comes back in. Are you fucking kidding me? Like, how did they not see this? Like, there's people that are paid to see this. Like, how did they not see this problem coming?
Yeah, I've seen it kind of pushed around, especially lately, where some people are proposing that we have an eye in the sky, so to speak, where a past NHL official, a retired referee, or someone with reffing experience who they've already got upstairs. I had to look it up. I was always saying someone should be up there with reffing experience. They've already have that implemented in place, but we should be able to have that guy call down on plays that the refs aren't able to change anything, and they need to start getting these right. Because I don't want everything to start being reviewable. Believe me, I don't think that's good for the game. It seems right now it's just the offsides, it's just goaltender interference, and if anything happens that's out of line, if the ref doesn't call it as is, it's tough luck. So,
well, another thing too you got to remember is these refs are individuals who all see hockey differently. Like, I see the game different than you see the game, right? So there's always going to be – it's hard to get that consistency when one guy will call 12 penalties in a game, no problem, and another guy just still has that old, it's playoff hockey, let him play. And I will say, though, Kyle, I'm not one to bust out my tinfoil hat too often, but I got some of this legal blueberry kush from the old legal smoke store down in St. Catharines. And it's getting me fucking thinking, man. Something's going on here. Like the Boston and San Jose thing. Like Boston's had some beneficial calls, man. It's hard to say that they haven't this playoffs. And the Sharks are just being gifted games. Like it's a fucking coming on a goddamn fucking platter for them. Like something's going on here. My tinfoil hat is on and something's wrong and something's fucking happening.
Baby. Yeah, I did like the quote that Pete DeBoer gave out today when someone asked him if his team's getting lucky. He came out and said, you know what, I hate that word. And the reason being is that our team's played, you know, 5 elimination games, 12 out of 15 periods where our season's been on the line. And to be honest, I know that they've had some fortunate bounces, but at the same time, the Sharks have played a hell of a game anytime their season's on the line. And beneficiary calls, yes, on the Landeskog play, but I mean, it's tough to say.
And the fucking first round have Vegas them in their back pocket,
but it certainly looks that way. It certainly does look that way.
Yeah, but it seems like the Sharks get it. The Sharks get it in such a beneficial way, like against Vegas, that 5 minute, that was the worst 5 minute ever. They called that it was what happened.
They didn't see it. That's what I mean. They couldn't review it. They couldn't see it. They got it in a group and they said it looked bad. And that's why they gave it a 5 minutes. That's quote unquote what the ref said to the Vegas bench was that it looked bad. And Marchessault yapped right back at the refs and said, if you think that it looked bad, then you didn't see it. And, you know, he's right there. But I want to take a step back from the whole the NHL wants San Jose in the cup final strictly because, again, I don't think that was the refs doing anything. The refs couldn't overcall that goal last night if they wanted to. The ref that was in line of sight was behind the net. He couldn't see Meyer touch that puck last night with his hand.
There's four of them out there.
Yeah.
How about
them outside of the zone?
Yeah, if the game's moving too fast for these fucking guys, then put them on the outside in the fucking rink. That's ridiculous. There's four. There's fucking eight sets of fucking. There's eight eyeballs going on in that fucking rink. And I've seen some of those refs too. Those fucking inbred cross-eyed fucks. You'd be seeing different directions at one time. It's like having a fucking camera everywhere, man. They should be able to fucking see that. That's a fucking.
I do think we're.
I know the game goes fast, but fucking. Come on, even fast, you knew that was a fucking hand pass. There's four of them. Somebody's got to get that right.
Yeah, it sucks. I was reading today that a couple of money betting sites actually gave the people who put money on St. Louis their money back.
Yeah,
on the play.
Yeah, they did. That is a show of good faith to their customers.
Yeah.
Guess what?
They hate the game being called on that. That's when you know what's getting out of hand.
Embarrassing.
When a fucking money line is taking it back.
But they'll sit there for 5 minutes to see if a guy's skate blade came 2 millimeters off the ice, but they won't take fucking 5 seconds. That's what it would have took. They would have looked, saw the hand pass, and be like, oh, fuck, never mind. That's it. Game would have been back on.
Why would the fucking bookie give the money back, though? That's fucking...
They didn't do nothing. The league is getting into this tough spot, right? Because if a fucking money line is being taken off, for the people that they won money off of, something's going on in the NHL. And I do think we're going to see an answer, whether it's this offseason or next. I'm thinking next because that's obviously when the new CBA is up and the players are going to have to agree on a new contract. I think we're going to see...
You know they'll lock out.
Yeah, it's probably going to happen, whether it's a half season or not. It's almost a guarantee. Fox. Greedy Fox. But I do think we're going to see an answer.
So right now, like they should just extend this deal, but fix the goddamn review. Like,
I think
the
that
product on the ice is never
the eye in the sky, and it's a weird
product
thing too.
Is incredible.
Yeah,
young guys are incredible. McKinnon, McDavid,
the game's never been better. They need to fix
it. Panarin, all these fucking top end guys, Pasternak, Sagan, all these fucking guys are awesome, man.
Yeah, part of the product, the end result too, like the final game. So the product on the ice is affected by these refs.
Yeah.
It is.
The product right now can be a lot better than it is. It has all the parts to be. It's just that
I'm just
officiating
players,
and
so
the administration
talented.
Of it is absolute horseshit.
Yeah,
it's weird, though, because I've seen a couple times throughout the regular season, whether it's been a puck over the glass or a clear penalty that was missed, I've seen calls from the office in Toronto, from the war room, down to the referees, and they've corrected a play that the refs have missed. Now, I'm all for that. Again, if you want to have the eye in the sky who can collaborate with the refs on the ice, I do think that's a good thing for the game, as long as we're not nitpicking every single play. But at the same time, it seems like they want to pick and choose when to do that. That last night was a perfect opportunity for that to happen, for them to call down and say, that was a hand pass, that's no goal, but it's not something that the team can review, and that's a problem. So if you're a coach and you can't review that play, and you're in the war room and you can clearly say from a five-second replay that that goal shouldn't count, a call should be made and the play should be corrected on the ice, and I think that's the fix we're going to see. It's just not here yet.
No, I agree. Listen, I understand the referees are human. Herein lies my fucking problem, is the people in Toronto. Again, you can have the exact same play called up to them on two different nights, and they'll call two different things from Toronto.
That's true, too, and that is absolutely true.
Whatever's going on there, there's something fucking wrong with those fucking guys, man. Like, that shouldn't happen, and it's embarrassing for the game, and you're going to turn into the fucking NBA acting like this, where certain guys get calls and certain guys don't, and it's teetering that dangerous line where hockey could lose that integrity that it's always had.
Absolutely.
I can't fucking stand it. I think.
Could you imagine being a St. Louis Blue on the ice for that? You've seen Binnington whack the glass. You've seen Shen almost take off the ref's head. And you know what I mean?
Like Happy Gilmore and tried to.
The morale in that room, I don't want to say it's got to be broken.
Yeah, but, I mean, I've taken my skate off and tried to stab somebody, Happy Gilmore style, man.
I still hold two records in junior.
Yeah, man. Are you fucking kidding me? I would have been sick if I was on that ice. That was garbage, man. I hated seeing that. Again, it's just bad for the game. It's bad in general. But Kyle, moving on. Right now, that is a good series. It's 2-1 for the San Jose Sharks. I think San Jose's looked like the better team
at times.
And at other times, I mean, I'd say overall, I'd say they're 55-60% the better team in that series. I expect them to come out. Boston, Carolina hasn't even really been close. The last game was close.
I mean, not if you were watching Tuukka Rask. The game didn't look close. I know it was a one-goal game, but Rask has played out of his mind. He looks like Jonathan Quick in 2012 when he went 16-2 with a 1.49 goal against and a .940 save percentage. Rask is gearing up for the same kind of year. He's having an unreal year.
I haven't seen him play this good.
I think this is the best Rask has ever played.
Yeah, no, it definitely is, man. And it's funny because he's kind of gotten the reputation. I know he got to the cup final and lost. Producer Ed loves that. But he didn't look good in that series either. Some of those games were so high scoring because Crawford and fucking Rask were in net letting in 4 or 5 goals.
Yeah, Crawford didn't have a glove back then.
No, exactly. You just shot glove side on Crawford. Most times it went in. Rask you could beat easily. But right now, holy shit, man. He looks, like you said, quick, on a mission, man, just locked in, no bad rebound, seems to get a hold of everything, no second chances at all come out of him.
You know what he's really fixed?
I don't know what the
fixed?
Fuck he's on right now, but if I were the league, I'd be testing that guy, because I like Rask, and I think some people, I hear Bruins fans, the ones that are the anti-Tuukka Raskers, they're not the majority of Bruins fans, they're a minority with a loud voice. They love to yell about him. He's definitely worth $7 million a year. But right now, man, he's playing the best goalie in the fucking league right now. I don't know if he can sustain it, but goddamn, it's been impressive.
What I've noticed the most about Rask is that he's always had a strong game, but as sure as hell that as good as Rask is, he's good for one or two squeakers a game.
Yeah.
You're not getting anything past them. Those squeakers aren't going in, and those high save opportunities are barely going in. Again, I think we're both in agreement here that Rask is playing the best hockey of his career, and Boston is officially in walking season because they've got to fucking walk to the final here. I don't want to shit on the Leafs, but, that was a first-round bye, if you ask me, and then they get to play Columbus, who I know they looked great. They took down the juggernaut in Tampa, but as I said, that wasn't the same team that played Tampa. That was a different team that played Boston. And Carolina, I know there was a lot of hype. They beat some good teams to get here. It's like the LA Kings run, man, when they had to play fucking St. Louis, Vancouver, Arizona, the New Jersey in the cup. Might as well fucking hand Boston the cup at this point. But
I think the Sharks could give the Bruins a go.
What I was just going to say. I'm taking the West over Boston, whether it's St. Louis or San Jose that comes out of this series. Just because.
It'll come down to goaltending. And Boston right now has the advantage. Martin Jones is not a reliable goalie.
Not like Tuukka Rask.
No. I would say you take away Martin Jones' first four games of the postseason.
No, I'm just going from a bigger sample size. I'm looking at him regular season and everything. He's had a terrible year. He was on a good team. He had a terrible year, though.
There's a lot of goaltenders that, look at Bobrovsky's numbers. He had a freaking really mediocre year, and then he turned it on in the playoffs. But if you ask me, Jones has always been a better goalie in the regular in the postseason than he has been in the regular season. And I know we didn't see it in the first couple games this year, but if you look at Jones, his numbers through his last 10 games, he's looked phenomenal. I'm not saying he looks just as good as Tuukka Rask, because he doesn't, but I think that if you do take that blemish of the first couple of games for Martin Jones, it's a closer goalie comparison than you think.
No, definitely, and that's why I said I think San Jose could do it. I still am going to keep the Homer goggles on. I think that Boston has four really solid lines. They're finally able to roll forward lines. It's funny, going into this playoffs, and I would have agreed too. I mean, everyone was saying Boston's a one-line team. They've had 20 different goal scorers in this playoffs. They are getting the most depth scoring out of any team. Charlie Coyle almost leads the team in points on the third line, and Johansson. Like, they're just all, it seems like the team is finally,
they have like 15 different goal scorers together
since the trade deadline, that they figured out their chemistry. And a guy like Sean Corrali on the fourth line, who can match up against the team's second line because he's a really, really responsible defensive center, that puts you at an advantage for a third line with Charlie Coyle and Marcus Johansson on it, right? Like, so I think they're going to be tough to beat. I like San Jose's odds against anybody too, but I'm going to keep it in the East, man. I think that the East had the better product this year.
I won't disagree with you there.
Just convenient that both hosts like Eastern Conference teams, mind you.
No, even outside of that, the East was a far stronger division this year, and I'm usually the guy that says the West is the better division.
Well, it was always that way. It's always going to be a balanced swing, right? It's just natural. That's the way that it goes in the game. Like, everybody that was good at that time, their players start to get older and they start to run into the salary cap and you send guys out. Exactly, right? Chicago, LA, you're seeing them go through the struggles. Boston missed the playoffs for 2 years after they went to the Cup. They missed the finals. They missed the playoffs for 2 years. You've got to go through it, man. And Tampa will have their time, too, where they'll miss the playoffs for a couple of years and they'll have to retool.
Every team goes through it, even Boston. They missed two out of three playoff series just a couple years back, or missed the playoffs for 2 years in a row, was it?
Yeah, 2 years in a row under Julian, yeah.
Yeah, and then, you know what I mean? They turn around, get Cassidy back in the picture. Pretty much the same core, a couple new additions. But, I mean...
New coaching style.
Teams go through it, man. Teams go through it.
1999 hockey, where Cassidy's a younger guy, right? So it's all just fucking pedal to the metal, forecheck, and get the fuck back. He's a pretty intense guy. Where Claude's more fucking, like you said, it's 1999 out there. Claude Julien, man. That's why the Canadians were competitive, though. They play so good defensively.
Yeah. Now, I'd turn the page here just a little bit, Chris. I know the draft is kind of around the corner, and for about 3 years, Jack Hughes has been the consensus number one pick across the board.
Yeah.
Chris, if you ask me, that's changing, and it's changing quickly. And I hate to judge performances based off one tournament. For any teams not in the playoffs, if guys are paying attention, there's the IIHF World Hockey Tournament going on, and Kaapo Kakko looks like the best player on the ice for any team. He's already got 6 goals in the tournament,
and
some of them have been absolute beautiful goals. Then you got the Leaf fans coming out of the woodwork saying, look at William Nylander, he leads the fucking tournament in scoring. Yeah, against fucking Austria and Norway. Kakko's been throwing goals up against the U.S. He's been throwing goals up against Canada. He's been throwing goals against Slovakia, who've been impressive in that tournament as well. And suddenly, when you look at a guy like Hughes, 0 points. I know he's only played 4 games, but I know he's playing on the third line. He's playing on the third line with DeBrincat and Kane.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, Kaapo Kakko, he doesn't have NHL talent that he's surrounded with. And every time he's on the ice, he's got first line from every team defending them. So I hate judging performances based on one tournament alone. But if you ask me, that race, that number one and two slot, it could go either way. And the reason I brought it up is that the New Jersey Devils already have a small forward, a small center, that I should say, that they're building their team around in Nico Hischier. Are they going to add a second small center? Would you want your one and two center down the middle to be Nico Hischier and Jack Hughes for the foreseeable future? I don't know about that, Chris.
Yeah, the size is definitely would be an issue. But, I mean, that said, the game is changing, man. It's, you don't have to be such a powerful force down the middle, especially if you can get decent at face-offs. You've seen Tyler Seguin come a long way in that department from when he was younger. That kind of comes with age. That said, I think that maybe for a team like Jersey, just surrounding Hischier with, I know he has Taylor Hall, but you know he's good for 30 games missed a year, 20 games missed a year. It just seems to happen for the guy. I think that surrounding another good, talented fucking winger like Capo Caco might be not a bad idea in Jersey, Kyle. And I was team Jack Hughes first. I usually go by the rule, take the center. Center's a really hard position to fill. Grab the center when it's a toss-up. Like, I think the Leafs made the right pick with Patrick Laine. I remember you were on the campaign of the Patrick Laine's better than Austin Matthews tour. That didn't end up so well.
And I think said better goals.
I worry about that, but Capo Caco is a big, he plays the game the right way, man. And I think if you're Jersey, it's more beneficial just to have another solid forward in the mix. It doesn't necessarily have to be a center, because like you said, they kind of would want to build a center with another. I think they'd want someone with a little size and grit.
I'm not saying that you need to build your team on size and grit. And I'm not trying to be, you know, Brian Burke here behind the desk trying to get Tyler Biggs drafted here. But what I am saying is that you've seen it in this playoffs. Some of those small skilled forwards were completely invisible. Braden Point, invisible. Johnny Gaudreau, invisible. Nikita Kucherov, invisible. I don't want to say Marner was invisible because he made his impact shown, but he didn't have a great year. He didn't have the success.
He only had one really good game in the playoffs. Other than that, him and Tavares were quiet.
That's what I'm saying. The NHL playoffs are a different game, and it's not as advertised through the regular season. And I wouldn't feel comfortable as a franchise having two small guys down the middle. Who's going to be the shutdown center there? Your third line center? That's fine. You're going to have like a Jordan Staal-esque player center that third line. But I still think that passing up on Caco here is tough to do. But what a great spot you got to be in if you're the New York Rangers here. They don't got to make any decision. The decision's made for them, and they're happy regardless.
Yeah,
the pressure is all on New Jersey here. They have to assess the difference between Caco and Hughes, and they got to make the call, and they got to live with the consequences if they make the wrong pick. New York doesn't have to do that. New York's not picking the wrong player. They just got to let the other team decide, and they're sitting and laughing anyways. Crazy for them to even be in that spot, considering the Rangers haven't had a top five pick in 20 years, and then they lock into this. And Chrissy, I've heard many people say it before, and this is what the Edmonton Oilers went through in their 3 years. It's not how many times you fail, it's when you fail. Because you can get Nail Yakupov, you can get Nugent Hopkins, and you can get Taylor Hall first overall 3 years in a row. But, you know, if only one of those guys, Taylor Hall, is truly worth that, you know, elite talent, you know, it's when you fail. New York doesn't have to finish in the bottom five for the next 5 years. They've got a first overall pick, regardless of their pick in first or second here.
Yeah, no, it's a nice spot to be in. It's a nice draft to be in the bottom of. Reminds you of that Taylor Hall, Tyler Seguin draft a little bit.
Yeah, you really can't go wrong.
You can't go
both
wrong.
Both are going to have phenomenal careers. In my opinion, I think that Capo is the more NHL-ready product, but if Hughes can be developed properly, he's going to be a force in a couple years. I do think that he's got a bit of growing pains to go through, whether he plays another year junior or whether he sees some time in the AHL. I don't consider Hughes NHL-ready now, but that's subject to change.
Well, I talked to a scout on Twitter. He DMs me a little bit. He's a good guy. And he is Team Capo Caco number one overall. He said he compared Hughes to who's the guy the Flyers took in the first round? I'm having a stone.
Nolan Patrick.
Yeah. He said that he could see Hughes not being enough enough in the league. I don't know.
I haven't seen Hughes play enough. I've seen him play in the World Juniors where he looked great.
That's just what he said.
He broke the U.S. national record for points in a year. So, I mean, it's tough to say that he's not an elite talent. And this is a guy for 3 years ago, everyone knew he was going first overall. And I don't think it's going to change as much as I think Capo Caco should go first overall. I think the New Jersey Devils are going to end up taking Hughes in fear for their making the wrong decision. And the Rangers are going to luck out and grab an absolute lethal weapon in Capo Caco at number two.
Yeah, would not be surprised to see that at all. You saw the Buffalo Sabres, Kyle. They hired Ralph Krueger's back into the hockey scene. You know, he was like the chairman of like Southampton soccer team or something like that for a little bit.
Yeah, he was involved over in Europe for a bit. Kind of weird to see him make this change back, but... I read a really good story on how he made his decision to come back and to coach in the NHL. And this is a guy who took his wife, went out to the bars in Buffalo, and got the fan reaction on how this city is committed to their sports. And he got a really eye-level view of, you know, what this city stands for and what this city brings. And I do think he made the right decision. I seen a guy, Mike Commodore, was very high of this signing. He said that Krueger is the most honest guy, but he's all about positivity. You've seen when he had his stint in Edmonton, he was really over Taylor Hall for his body language. He preaches positivity, and I think that is one of the most important things needed in Buffalo. That's why Ryan O'Reilly left. That locker room was broken. There was a losing mentality written all over that team. And to have a guy like Krueger come in, whose main approach is a positive approach in really changing that whole losing mentality of the Sabres, I think that there's a right guy for the job. It's him, and I'm happy with that decision. I love Buffalo. I think it's a great city, and they deserve a great team. And I've got... high hopes for the Buffalo Sabres for next year. Jack Eichel is going to take another step forward. They're going to add another great pick in this draft that's as deep up as from the third overall pick all the way up to 15. There's talent available here in this draft. As long as they don't take another Casey Mittelstad, no pull-up, then I think the Sabres are going to be in good hands.
Yeah, no, I can see that for sure. And I also think that the Sabres, again, like you said, their locker room is bent. And they have a losing mentality in there. Krueger, like a positive guy, really, really like can sell that underdog story to them. And I think they're going to play much better hockey next year. I really hope that they'll pay up. It's just Jeff Skinner hopefully stays in Buffalo. If you're a Sabres fan, nope. You really want that.
I want that.
And Skinner looked really good there, man.
Why would you not want to play with Jack Eichel for the next 7 years?
His first half of the season, he had 30 goals at like just after Christmas.
If you're Jeff Skinner, like, why would you leave? You get to play with Jack Eichel for the next 7 years. I know it's Buffalo and it's the one of the dirtiest cities in America, but I mean, if you get to play with a top flight talent in Jack Eichel, I'm not going anywhere if I'm Jeff Skinner.
Yeah, hey, I will say though, Buffalo. I went over to Buffalo a little while ago. There, I went to a concert with a certain sexy John Resnick.
Oh,
it was a Goo Goo Dolls concert, and they've really revitalized down in that area of Buffalo. They have a really good mayor going on right now, and actually the city looks a lot better, and apparently it's on the path to becoming like a better all around city, Buffalo. So,
well, you've seen the Harbor Club they put down there, the new bar. It's fucking nice, man.
Yeah, dude.
Went there before the Sabres game. I didn't even want to go. I was like, let's just stay here and drink the beer.
Yeah, big old fucking screens there, man. That place kicks ass.
Yeah, for sure. Now, Chris, going back to the Boston series, they play tonight. It's game 4. 3-0 Boston. is it pretty fair to say that Carolina's going to get swept, or do you see a game five happening here?
Kyle, I'm praying for a game five, to be completely honest with you, because I think the Blues are going to take the next one. I think that series at least goes six, seven games. I don't want to sweep. I don't want to sit. I think it's bad to sit. I think it's better when you just especially keep the goalies. Mojo going.
Five or six
especially
games.
For Rask, who's just dialed into this zone right now where basically he's like... just
you don't want to break his concentration with 10 days off.
Exactly, man. I'm hoping that we don't do the sweep. But here's the thing. Carolina's kind of broken, man. Like, Justin Williams is getting three penalties in the first period. And I love Don Cherry. This mean, I have no disrespect to Grapes. I think he's fucking hilarious. But he's going out there going, Boston's going to lose because they got Justin Williams all fired up and good for him. It's like, buddy, he took three penalties in the first period. Like, that's not smart. Like, they're too young. I don't think they really realize what the Eastern Conference Finals are about. And for that reason, Kyle, I think the Bruins could be coming out tonight. And I'm not happy about it.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be happy about it either.
I don't want to say it.
The long haul, the long rest. I think it weakens your team. And, you know, you look at all these teams that swept in the first round. They've turned around and gotten swept in the next. So what does that say? What does that show? That maybe that time off isn't as good as you think.
Yeah, the Islanders they swept Pittsburgh, and then they got swept by Carolina, and now we could potentially sweep Carolina.
Which means that whoever comes out of the West should sweep Boston, right?
That could be. If that happens, that's like some crazy fucking, like, the number 23 with Jim Carrey movie shit. Like, that'd be some weird-ass pattern shit going on.
Have been a sweep in the Stanley Cup Finals before?
What's that?
Has there ever been a sweep in the Stanley Cup Finals before? I'm sure in the 70s.
I remember the Detroit Red Wings swept the Philadelphia Flyers when Lindros was big.
And the Capitals. They did it with the Capitals, too. Wolf Kolzig, they swept the Capitals too.
Yeah, they swept the Capitals as well, Detroit. Yeah. They swept.
Yeah, I think it happened a couple times.
Back throughout to back, the year. Right?
Yeah, they went back to back with back to back with back to back sweeps, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, it hasn't been done in a while. I don't think we're going to see that this year, as funny as it would be.
No. You won't see that. That'll be a great series. Whatever team makes it out. Even if Carolina pulls the old Philadelphia Flyers on the Bruins, fucking.
Not happening.
No, I think that the Carolina Hurricanes might be dead, man.
Especially, and I don't disagree with hopping back and forth between Mrazek and McElhinney, but when you don't have that number one guy, that guy that you can truly look back there and feel more than comfortable knowing that he's going to get you out of a jam, like Boston feels right now with Rask in net, I just don't think there's enough to get it done. I don't think they're going to win a game. I do think that Boston wins tonight and sweeps the Carolina Hurricanes, and that's best case scenario for everyone, unless you're a Bruins fan.
Yeah, like kind of like if you you just want to see them, like old Yeller, the Carolina Hurricanes, take them out back and shoot them and then sit and rest and look bad. I can kind of see that happening, man. I hope it doesn't happen. I want to see those guys do their little choreography on the ice at least one more time. Make Don Cherry mad. That might be funny to watch.
They'll probably do it if they lose tonight anyways.
Yeah, I bet. Do you think if they lose, are we going to get a storm surge?
Well, I don't think we'll get a storm surge celebration, but I do think you will see a bit of a different
You'll see the clap go down, just the clap?
Maybe.
No bowling probably, but you'll probably see the clap go down.
No slam dunk or, hey, maybe they pull the brooms out and show us some choreography.
Yeah, maybe they get one of their mascots to sweep them off the ice. Well, whatever happens tonight, we're going to keep everybody updated. Make sure you follow us on Twitter and Instagram at GC Hockey Show. Follow Great Canadian Podcast. Subscribe on YouTube. And you got to like the shit, too. That always helps as well.
Like, follow, subscribe.
And give a share out there. You know, there's a lot of people out there that listen but don't give you the share. And I'm not trying to say like where's the shares, but like give us the share.